Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong, profitable impact on your business.
Good morning, and welcome back to your Partner in Success Radio. Boy, it's going to be one of those mornings, I can tell already. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and my mission is to bring you the most interesting entrepreneurs, business people, authors, speakers, just people that I know who can freely share their business wisdom, their tips, and their actionable advice with us each week. And this week, I'm really excited. I get to welcome back to the show Tom Schwab. Now, Tom is the leader of the e-commerce HubSpot user group, and he speaks and writes extensively on how an inbound strategy is transforming e-commerce. In my first interview with Tom, we talked about inbound marketing. So be sure to go back and listen to that interview because it really does set the stage for our discussion today. You can find the link in the show notes, and you can also find it in iTunes. Today, Tom will share really actionable details on how to turn content into cash, which is a big question. People, you know, tend to have a lot of content on hand that they don't even really know that they have. And he's going to really talk to us about what to do with that content and how to make it work for you. So to that, So he's going to be sharing the three things every piece of content must have to turn content into cash, which is, of course, what we're talking about. And he's also going to share how getting help to pump up the horsepower of your marketing engine is critical. He's got some great stories, thoughts, lessons, and resources to share. And be sure to join us in the chat room so you can ask questions of Tom as the interview progresses. We had some great questions the last time he was here. Tom, good morning. Welcome back. I'm so excited to have you here.
Denise, I am thrilled to be here.
Well, thank you. I wish people could have heard us in the chat room. I mean, we were covering all kinds of things. And we may get to some of that on the show if it's appropriate, because some of it's pretty important. So before I get started, tell people what you're up to and what we're going to be talking about today.
Yeah, a few weeks ago we talked, and it was the fastest hour I think I had of the entire week. We were just talking about how to use an inbound strategy, how to change from the old marketing that was all about interruption and the marketing that people hate, and how to use the tools that we have today to really engage with people and be the one that helps them, answers questions, and using the content that you already have to attract people to your business, and how to go ahead and engage them to make them from visitors to leads, and then nurture them to being customers, and then ultimately making them into advocates. And, you know, one of the things we touched on last time, and I know there were some questions about it that I got afterwards, was this whole idea of e-commerce. And too many people think that e-commerce is just selling on Amazon or eBay, and they'll say, well, I don't have a product. Well, if you're on the Internet, really you can use these tools and the ideas around e-commerce to really turn your content into cash. For example, you know, we've worked with authors that, you know, they write a book, but Amazon's making all the money off of it, not them. So how can they take that content and really engage with their customers? Other ones are like nonprofits that how can they engage with people that come to their website so that they can collect a donation, but then also nurture them so that, you know, they're building a relationship with that. So there's so many things, and I'm glad we're talking here May 1st, because I always, you know, try to plan my content out a month in advance. It's always hard to come up with a content idea that you've got to do today, but I think if you go ahead and sit down and say, what's my plan for this month? What can I talk about? What can I share? I think at the end of the month, you'll see some incredible results.
I do that. I have a marketing calendar that I set up every month. And just so you know, just so the audience knows, there are only 244 days remaining until the end of the year. Now, if that doesn't scare the panties off of you, I don't know what will. Seriously, what happened to the year? Like I was telling you in the green room, I have boxes of Christmas decorations, you know, these big red and green tubs still stacked up in my garage. I'm thinking I won't bother to put them in the attic. There's no point. Christmas is about 3 weeks away.
Well, I know I mentioned, too, that I spoke with one of my friends and mentors and asked him how he was doing on his yearly goals. And he said confidently, I'm still going to make them this year, but I'm feeling about 120 days behind right now. So there's a lot of things, and while it's only 244 days or whatever, there's still things that we can do today. And one of the things that I love about, you know, content marketing and inbound marketing is that it's a compounding effect. So that blog or video or podcast like this that goes out today, it'll have a little impact today, but people are going to find it next week, next month, and so it has a compounding effect. It's not like an ad that you buy once and it goes away. It's really an investment in your business. And, you know, the old joke about when was the best time to plant a tree was 40 years ago. The second best time is today. And I would say the same thing about content. You know, when was the best time to do it? Well, maybe 5-10 years ago. The second best time is today.
That's exactly right. And you're correct. We have people in the chat room. We'll have people listen live today. But I have found with this radio show and with a lot of my blog posts and the work that I put out that it can be a year down the road and people are going, oh, whoa, I need that. I'm going to listen to that now. I'm going to read that now. It's amazing to me how many comments I get from people on just about any content that I put out that they didn't pay attention the first day. But when they needed it, they found it.
And it's a great service that we can do because it really multiplies your time, right? As opposed to just sharing it with one person, now we can share it, archive it, and, you know, the internet is such a great place, and really everybody's going to the internet for answers to their questions. You know, there's social media where you go to maybe for entertainment, but you're also going there for news and ideas and things that your friends like. And even Google, you think about it, everybody goes to Google to get an answer to their question. And if you've got the content out there that answers their question, you know, that's the best way to sell to a customer, is not to sell to them all, but go ahead and let them know that you're an expert and, you know, build their trust and all of that, and be at a place so that they have the opportunity to buy from you. It's more of helping the buyer as opposed to focusing on selling. It's two sides of the same coin, but it has a big impact.
Oh, yeah. Look, I have always said that the best thing that you can do for yourself and for your clients, your consumers, customers, however you want to state it, is to become a resource and a constant resource. You know, you're always looking for things that might be of interest to them. You're putting up other people's posts or blogs because it's relevant to what your audience needs. Share everything you can share. Be a resource.
Because, you know, when the studies have shown that 70% of the buying decision now is made before the customer ever contacts the seller. Because we're going out there.
I read that on your page. Yeah, I read that on your website this morning.
There's that study's been put out. I know HubSpot was the one that I saw it from, but there was actually another source that they got it from. But it's true that, think about it, before we buy something, we're looking up reviews, we're looking up alternatives, all of those things, so that when we actually do start to make the sale or purchase, 70% of the work is done before we even start the process of engaging with whoever we're going to work with. And that could be a product, a service. But with that, you think about it. If they're doing the research and your name keeps coming up and your content keeps coming up, and, you know, this is going to do stuff where you're going to be seen as an educator, a value adder, somebody that builds trust. And the amazing part is that what's ordinary to you is amazing to other people. They've got those questions out there. And, you know, the world is so big. And the tools are so powerful. If somebody has a 1 in a million question, that means that, 7,000 people have the same question? So why not just put it online in the form of some content, and in one time you can reach anybody throughout time that will ask that question.
Right. And honestly, Tom, this is not a new concept, and I'm racking my brain. There used to be a book. In fact, I had a friend that carried it around with her all the time, kind of pre-Amazon and, you know, pre-Yelp and all of that. Wasn't that long ago, by the way. It might have been 10 or 15 years ago. But there was this giant book that everybody went to for market reviews. You know, what kind of car should you get? What kind of computer can you get? And for the life of me, it's gone. I can see her holding this book. I can't read the title of the book. And I'm sure somebody in the chat room will go, well, duh, here it is. But you know what I'm talking about? That big book that everybody, you know, they really depended on that to say, well, should I buy, you know, a Dell? Should I buy, you know, this kind of pool? What should I buy? And that was kind of the Bible for the longest kind of time. So it's not a new concept. It's just grown exponentially.
And we're all carrying that book along with us right now. It's probably in our smartphone someplace where we can go ahead and search things, or, you know, put a tweet out there and ask questions. And if there's a resource out there that people can find and share, the person that not only made the resource gets credit, but then also the person that shared it gets credit. So to your point, sometimes it's not always creating all of the content, but just curating it for your audience and being seen as a thought leader in that resource. And that's why we had put out last month a resource, and it's just basically 101 different content ideas. Because so many people think, oh, content means a blog. Well, there's so many different areas out there. And so we just started brainstorming and came up with 101 different content ideas. And if anybody's interested in that resource, they can just go to inbound4ecommerce/partner for Partner in Success Radio here. And anything we talk about today will be there, and you can go ahead and download that. And sometimes it's hard to take notes, but all the resources will be there.
Excellent. I'm going to go grab that myself. And thank you. I appreciate it. The audience appreciates it. So I will get the link up into the chat room. So curating, that's a term that I'm aware of, and I know you're aware of it, but it's starting to kind of come into the common lexicon right now. Can you explain to our audience just what you mean by curating?
Very much so. And I always think of it as a museum. What's the best museum that you like, you go to over and over, that you take your friends to, that you tell them what you saw there? Think about it. They didn't make all of the stuff in the museum. They don't even own most of the things in the museum. A lot of museum pieces are on loan from other galleries or other individuals. But what they've done is they pulled it together, and they've with a critical eye looked at it and said, oh, our audience would like this piece, and our audience would like this piece. And so that they, in their platform there, their museum, they bring all of the resources together so that people can go there and have a great experience. And if you think about it, you know, most museums or curation on this, they're very focused. So they'll have, you know, one section for modern art, and another one, I can think of one that my son always loved in Chicago. They have medieval armor. That's the only part he wanted to ever see. But we would go there, and they would have everything that he needed to see in one place. And so with the same thing as websites here, we can do the same thing. We've got some of our content, but as we find other content that is interesting to our ideal buyer persona, well, we can put that up there. We can retweet it. We can put stuff up on Facebook posts that, you know, people, our audience would like to see. And there's some of that which becomes social proof, right? So if you're sharing other people's content, that means that you're confident enough in your own ability that you see them as peers and not competition. I say always in e-commerce, one of the best blogs that you can write is, you know, five alternatives to your company, or the best, you know, best five people in the industry. You know, you'll be one of them, but include four others that talk about their strengths, their weaknesses, I've always loved that one because it's amazing. If you're the one that produces that content, those four other people that are in that list, they'll go ahead and start republishing that. They'll curate it. They'll share it with other people. And so basically, they're starting to promote you to their audience.
And I think it's so important that people understand that in your industry or in my industries, whatever it is that we're doing, I guess we're going to have competition. I'll be honest with you. I don't consider that I have any competition. What I do is very unique. It's very much me. I love it. My clients love it. So we're all good. I don't need every single person in the world to be my client or my consumer. And, you know, I look at people who would, and I'm doing air quotes here. I hate air quotes, but I'm doing them. You'd be my competition. And I'm telling you, they've got some great stuff. So I absolutely curate them. Because while whoever's reading their stuff and my stuff, it gives them the opportunity to make a choice and to really find the best partner for them, the best partner in success. So I'm happy to curate content. And when, but the caveat is I read everything I curate because titles are misleading. And that's one thing I find that people, they just, oh, great title. I'm just going to post this out there. Did you read that before you posted it? The answer is no. So I would caution you to go past the, you know, the subject title. Just be careful about what you're actually curating.
Yes, you need to be a filter because people trust you, and you're not just supposed to be there to amplify all the time. Make sure that you filter out the noise before you amplify it.
So you said noise, I said junk, but yeah, we're talking the same thing. Okay.
Listen, well, I could call it other things, but I don't want to, you know, lose the PG rating on this show.
Yeah, we're on the radio. I just found the link. I posted it in the chat room. Is it okay with you if I post this on social media? I don't want to do it without your permission.
Oh, go right ahead.
Okay, we'll do. I'll do that after the show. Okay, so we've got a lot to talk about. Now, what is it that was top of your mind today?
Yeah, the first one is just change your idea of what you think of as content. Most of the time people will say content equals blogs. If you look at it, everything we do could be content if we could capture that and share it with people. And like I said, there's that list of 101 ideas, and it didn't take us long to get those. But, you know, everywhere from take a famous quote that that's meaningful to you or your business and put that on an image. You know, there's a free tool called Canva, and that's content right there. You can share that on tweets, on your website, on Facebook. You know, take a video of just walking around your office. Give somebody a behind-the-scenes view of what your company is. That really connects with them. You can take a radio interview like this, and this is great content. You could go ahead and transcribe portions of this and use it in other places. I did a blog.
I could make a Kindle book out of it.
Exactly.
Honestly, I'm thinking about doing this, and you're going to be in it because I'm not thinking about doing it. It's on my list of things to do. I'm not kidding. But the thing is, I'm creating a quick Kindle book. It's basically just the top moments of my favorite radio interviews.
And
it's going to be on Kindle for 99 cents. I mean, why not?
And that's a great example of curation, right? You've got this content that other people helped you create. You're bringing it all together. You're repurposing it. And then you're sharing it out with other people. And so it's a great, great way to do it because the tools out there are so amazing. I did a blog post a couple of weeks ago, and it was called, How to Write a Blog as You Drive. And I actually, instead of recording my blogs like I usually do, I did a video, and you can watch the video and then read the blog, and they're the same thing. Because what I do is I don't get a lot of creativity or inspiration when I'm sitting at my desk behind my keyboard. But when I'm out and about, I get it all the time. So what I'll do is I'll have an idea for content and say, hey, I would like to talk about this in a blog today. And, you know, the inspiration could come in the shower. Well, on my way to work, I'll think about it, write down a couple of notes. And then on this one, I was driving to work and turned on the video recorder. Most of the time I just do audio recording. and I'll just talk about it. And if you think about it, we all talking about 150 words a minute is typical. So in a 4-minute discussion, you've got a 600-word blog right there, which is typically what Google likes. So what I do is I'll record it, and there's an app out there just called Rev.com. There's a bunch of them out there. It's the one I use. And they'll transcribe any audio for $1 a minute. So I'll record a blog. I'll hit transcribe. And then a real human individual will go ahead and transcribe that and email it to me. And so right there, I've got the blog, and it's all typed out. And now, granted, I've got to do some editing, some formatting, throw a picture in there. But for me, it's just a way to use that content in different ways. And, you know, like I said, if it's a video, I can put the video up. I can transcribe it and into a blog. So think about it that way. If you've got videos for $1 a minute, you could transcribe that into a blog.
And if you put it up on YouTube, they have that transcription service built in.
Yes. Once again, I would always warn people, whenever anybody transcribes for you, read it first.
Check it.
It's always funny, little things. I don't care how good the transcriptionist is. I'll always blame it on how I talk, that there's certain words that come out differently than I intended. But, yeah, it is so easy to do.
And I love that idea. Like, I'm like you. I get my ideas in the shower. I get them when I'm out in the backyard with my little girly chainsaw. I've got a chainsaw and a stick that I'm fascinated with, and it's pink. And I'm just cutting stuff down and going, oh, idea. And I saw goes down, and back into the house I go. So I've learned to take my iPhone out with me and just hit the record button so I'm not tracking dirt through the house. You know, smart as I am, you think I would have figured that out sooner, but I didn't. I'm just not one of those people that likes to have their iPhone on them all the time. To me, it's a distraction. I just don't care for it. But there are so many ways. But I'm like you. The minute I open up that blank sheet of paper, at the end of 5 minutes, I have got an epic blank sheet of paper. I've got nothing. I mean, there's nothing. I don't even have a title. My inspiration comes from, like you, when I'm driving, I might hear a jingle or something that somebody said on the radio, and all of a sudden my mind is off on another tangent, and I've got a brilliant idea from it. So you pick up your inspiration from just about anywhere, and you need to be ready to have it, you know, to be able to put it back into your mind when the time comes. You can't just let it flow out, so to speak.
Right, and sometimes the inspiration comes from things that are going on around you. And one of the things that I've always done for myself and our customers is that before the month begins, we'll start looking at what's going on the next month. And we've actually put this together in a list that we share, and that's up on the resources also. And it's basically what's happening in the month of May. And it's all the national holidays, the different days. You know, in May, we've got National Limerick Day coming up. And there's Memorial Day and Mother's Day and all those things.
Right.
And you can go through this list and click on them to get more information about it. But you think about what your customers are going to be thinking about this month. What's going to be important to them? You know, if they're into horse racing or animals, something like that, well, the Kentucky Derby's coming up. So gardening, so you want to have a blog that talks about the Kentucky Derby. You know, if they're auto racing fans, well, the Indy 500 is coming up at the end of the month. You could probably tie something together with that. So just going through and almost piggybacking on the events that they're already going to be interested in. So as they're looking at different events to them, you can be the one that pops up there. You know, when they hear on the news that it's National Limerick Day, well, you knew about that 2 weeks before. You went to Odesk or Fiverr and spent $5 to have somebody do a limerick about your company or your product or something that would be interested into them. And that's just great shareable content there. And
guess what I'm doing when we get off?
I can always tell you the blogs that I should have written last week, but I didn't.
That is
so with this, to be able to look forward, and it's a resource, and basically if anybody wants it, we put it together for ourselves, and we'll just email it out to everybody the first day of the month and tell you what's happening. And it's all stuff that we've pulled, you know, collaborated against. again. We've collaborated, pulled it all off the internet from different places and just put it in one place. So it's got the list of all the different historical events that happened and, you know, the famous birthdays, things like that. So you can spend 5 minutes scrolling through it and probably come up with ideas for all your content for this upcoming month.
I love it. Thank you so much. That's an amazing resource, and I really thank you. Now, to go back to quotes, when you're saying that about quotes, I love quotes. I do find them inspirational. I know a lot of people, oh, man, it's already been said, it's already been done, it's already been written about. That doesn't mean it's not wisdom in a few short sentences. But what I like to do with quotes, and this is just my spin on it, I will find a really great quote, but then I will write my ideas about that quote, what it meant to me, what it may mean going forward, how it kind of struck me or affected me. And, you know, I don't like to just put up a quote. I like to tell people why I think it's important. And those posts get a lot of responses, I find.
And those posts are great because you could take that, you know, the image that you made with the quote and everything, you can put that on Facebook. And so somebody clicks on that, they come and they see your blog that you explain what it means to you, or Pinterest, so that you can repurpose them in so many ways. And I agree with you that, you know, your take on that quote is something that is unique to you, unique to your company, so that your voice does need to be heard on that.
And it opens up conversations. It's part of engagement. People go, well, you know, that's great. Or, yeah, it's not really the way I see it. You know, how about this? And you get to have conversations.
Yeah, and if you can engage a visitor in conversation, you just made them a lead. And once you get the discussion started, they're no longer just browsing. They're engaging with you, and your chances of converting them to a customer or identifying that they're not a good customer go up dramatically.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now I know I can just see that the audience going, okay, this is great information. I need to curate. I need to do this. I need to do that. But where do they start? What platforms do you really suggest people have? Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, blog. I mean, go through that list if you would. And then just kind of walk us through how often they should be creating or repurposing content so that they have a steady stream of information out there.
Yeah, I think the platform question is always, where is your ideal buyer persona? You know, where is that ideal next customer? Where are they at? So if you can figure out where they are right now, that's where you need to be. So you don't need to be all places. You just need to be where your customers are. And it's great because you can go ahead and test that out continually. We were working with a customer the other day, and we were spending all kinds of time on Twitter with them. And after, I think it was 45 days, I had to just talk to them and said, we spent a whole lot of time on this and had no engagement. I said, we spent less time on Facebook, but our engagement is so much higher there. You know, our customers have told us that they're on Facebook. So what we did is we pulled way back on Twitter and we doubled down on Facebook and saw great results with it. So with that, you know, always be testing. The true expert in your business is not you. It's not me. It's not some consultant. The true expert in your business is your customer, and they're voting every day with their dollars and their actions. So keep testing stuff and see what they come back with and tell you what they like and what they don't like. The one thing I would say is that no matter where your content goes, to make it really effective, to turn it from content into cash, you want to have three elements. And this goes for videos, radio interviews, podcasts, blogs even. And I guess if we can go through those, the first one would be make sure you know who you're writing it to or who you're addressing it to, because if it's written for everybody, it's written for no one. So have a picture in your mind of who is the customer that I'm writing to. What not only the demographics, which is the Census Bureau information, their age, their sex, their education, but more importantly, the psychographics. You know, What are their fears? What are their hopes? What are their inspirations? Who do they trust? You know, what are the feelings they have about me or my industry going into that? Because once you have that picture of that person that you're addressing, your content will be much more meaningful and engaging to them.
Now, Tom, is this what you mean by single buyer persona? Is that how you're defining that?
Yes. So,
okay.
An example that I use is that you look at a store in a mall, and you can figure out pretty much who the buyer persona is. So if I'm walking along with my teenage girls and we walk by Abercrombie and Fitch, they like it, and I'm totally turned off by it. And that's fine. They're not trying to sell to me because they've focused on who their customer is. Even you take a store that, you know, Sears, that pretty much sells to everybody, they've gone ahead and focused different areas. So they don't put the baby stuff right next to the Craftsman tools, right next to the, you know, women's intimate apparel. They're all sectioned off into different areas, different personas. So when you go ahead and do any content, try to figure out who that person is, who's the individual that you're talking to or the group that you're talking to. Because the images that you use, the language that you use will all be important on that.
And see, that makes perfect sense. I'm noticing grocery stores are starting to do that. You know, like high-end grocery stores, we have a homegrown store here called Rouse's. I love going in that store. It's like going to Disneyland for me. You walk in one section of the store, it's organic food, the lighting is low, it's beautiful, it's got wood floors, you can buy, you know, crawfish straight off the boats out of, you know, well, the crawfish don't come in on boats, but you can buy shrimp straight out of the Gulf, which is 15 miles away. I mean, it's so fresh that literally they just took it off the boat and brought it into the loading dock. And then you can go into the other section of the store, which is, you know, that's where you go buy your canned goods and your, you know, your cleaning supplies. Not as fun. It's well lit. It looks just like a grocery store. I never go in that end first. I go to the Disneyland end first. Have fun. You know, drink my little coffee and I smell all the vegetables and buy what I want and buy my, you know, fresh seafood, and then I go get the canned goods because by then I'm happy. You know, I'm not mad about having to go grocery shop. I hate grocery shopping. I hate shopping. So they've done a very smart thing by completely sectioning that store into two parts. I think it's just brilliant.
Right, and so think about that in your content too. You've got a short amount of time to connect with somebody. So make sure you're connecting with one group of people with each piece of content and not trying to get everybody in one, because if you're speaking to everybody, you're speaking to no one.
Right.
And that really brings
you into
that.
And that's the biggest mistake. Everybody makes
right.
that mistake.
We don't need 7 billion customers. We probably, you know, I don't know, need 700, 7,000, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
So make sure you're talking to them. And that really brings you to the second point on any piece of content. It should help that ideal buyer persona with one issue that they're having or one question they should have. Too often we make the mistake of, with our content, trying to educate people so that they know everything we do as opposed to helping them with a problem. And I always say that the difference there is like, if you want to be just educated on everything, well, you can go and sit in the Library of Congress and read everything there. You could go online and read everything, but nobody has the time. Nobody really wants to be totally educated on something. They just want the information to solve their problem. And that problem could be, you know, how do I do this? This problem could be, I need a smile. I need something funny today. I need inspiration. I need to know that somebody understands the way I feel. So really think about every piece of content should be written to one buyer persona to help them through one issue. And then the final thing is you've got to have a next step on it, right? Because it's like fishing for sharks. The first thing they do is they throw the blood and the guts in the water, and it's chum, and it attracts all of them. But that just attracts them. So It's the same way with content. It does no good if you're just attracting them if you don't have something to hook to help them along to the next spot. You know, if somebody's taken the time to watch your video or to read your blog, make sure at the bottom that you can put something that says, you know, hey, for more information, download this checklist, or here's five other blogs that might be helpful to you. Or if you'd like a free consultation, do this. Because really, you know, to be helpful, you're not going to be able to get it all in one piece of content. So try to help them along on their buying decision by always giving them the next step. And, you know, in marketing, that's typically called a call to action. And with that, a lot of times people will put some kind of image there, because as people are looking through the text, they're scanning it. You can see an image there that catches their eye, that encourages them to click to take action.
Right. And I wanted to ask you something. I mean, we're talking, I think, kind of esoterically here about blogs and content, but that led me to ask this question. When somebody is building out their webpage, I find that they're putting way too much content on there, and they're not following the steps that you just outlined. So correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't this outline kind of for webpages as well, websites as well? Your end result is that you want them to take a step, an action step, call you or schedule an appointment or, you know, fill out your poll or something, but you don't want to educate them on everything you know, as you so eloquently put it, and bore them to tears, but not offer them a way to reach you or a reason to reach you. Or am I
right
wrong?
Oh, no, that's right on. And I think more and more, as we as content creators, as website people, as business owners, you think about it, when we go ahead and do all of our website stuff, we're working off a desktop, right? When our customers are actually consuming it,
phone,
they're reading
iPad,
it off their phone. So
yep.
While I look at this page that says, you know, inbound for e-commerce / partner, I'm looking at that and thinking, I'm my own worst enemy here. Because I look at it and it's like, well, there's not a whole lot of text there. But I bet you if anybody right now is looking at that on their phone, their thumb's getting tired of scrolling until the point where they can get to the call to actions. So with that, yeah, just, you know, be brief, be concise, and be helpful with that. And
give them a reason to call you, to actually communicate with you.
And sometimes the education, if you just try to educate them too much, it can confuse them, right? Because I come to your website to learn something to solve my problem. Well, if you answer that question but bring up 20 more, you can actually slow down the sales process with it. So, you know, don't just go to educate them, help them with their problem and move it along. When we did some testing, e-commerce is a great platform to learn on, just because there's so much visitors. The buying cycle is typically fast, and you can see the results so quickly, as opposed to some longer buying cycles. So with that, we did some testing, and you know, one of the things we learned is when there's a decision page, when somebody's got that option to buy now, be it a landing page, be it a checkout page, that's the wrong time to put, you know, a call to action for a blog, or even to have that they could go ahead and read more, because they're trying to make a decision. Don't go ahead and try to educate them more to cut down on the decision. At that point, you know, help them along by giving them a testimonial from another customer, a picture of another customer, something like that, some social proof to help them move along. Because even that testimonial from a customer, that's good content. That's stuff that they can use that's meaningful to them. So making sure that you have the right content at the right spot.
Well, the reason I'm asking this is because, you know, I'm a web developer as well, and I recently shut down both of my websites, and I'm rebuilding them. And I spent last weekend going through all of my old content on my primary web development site, which is Your Office on the Web. I was appalled. I really was. I it worked back in the day, but things have changed, and you're right, it's a faster market now, and people want information. They honestly want to know what's in it for them. They don't want to know all my skill levels and all the different things that I can do and how magnificent my work is. Well, they might want to know that, but they just don't need to know all the nuts and bolts. And I looked at it, Tom, and I went, ah, and I put it behind a maintenance plug-in. I couldn't even begin to extrapolate it all out. So I started fresh, and it's cleaner, and I'm still working on it. It'll be done this weekend, but it's much cleaner and much leaner, and people are not going to have the opportunity to get confused with all the inner workings of my devious little mind. They don't need to know that, do they?
The best way I've heard it described is when a customer pointed out to me that everybody is selling Preparation H. And his point was well taken, that no matter what product or service we're selling, we're all excited about it. But the rest of the world sees it as Preparation H. You know, nobody wants a problem, but if they've got it, they want a solution. So
right.
Tell them how you can relieve their pain, and you'll make them happy. A Preparation H ad is probably interesting. In fact, if you want a good example of personas, I actually talk to people and tell them, go check out the website for Preparation H, because there's different personas, and you can click on there, and they've got one section that talks about, you know, a pregnant woman, and they're telling, you know, her story and different tips and tricks there and resources for her. There's another one that's like an over-the-road truck driver, and it's all the same product, but it's different people that they're telling it to, and they don't talk
right.
about the product. They just talk about the people's problems and how they can and solve it. So with that,
that is brilliant.
You know, when you talk about, you know, yourself, it always should be on, you know, what I have done to help other people as how I can help you.
That makes perfect sense, and I'm doing it. I'm following that lead. I've been. Yeah, I'm always looking at other people's websites and other people's marketing, and I'm finding, and this is not something that I can even toy with, the facts are in, leaner and meaner. It's got to be lean and clean and simplistic, and you've got to be able to get to the point and let people know how you can be of assistance to them. That's pretty much all there is to it.
Yep.
So, listen, tell people, I want to go back to Facebook if you don't mind.
Please.
So you were talking... I'm the same way with Twitter. I find that the marketing that I do with almost all my clients and certainly with myself, you know, Twitter's, you need a presence there, but I don't find that it really engages all that much. Facebook, though, is I find works very, very well, and I wanted to ask you, too, about Google Plus if we have time. So when you're working with your clients on Facebook, what do you typically have them do? I mean, how do you study... you know, the returns that they're getting, how do you study and then make those decisions? You know, do they need to boost their post? You know, what are they doing?
The big thing is to go ahead and measure everything. Facebook really changed their rules, I guess it was within the last 6 months or so.
Yeah,
where business pages, yeah, not everybody sees your business page. And there was unfortunately some companies that built their entire marketing off of the 10,000 friends they had
yep.
on Facebook. And overnight, Facebook changed the rules, and now of those 10,000 friends, only maybe 100 will at any one time see their messages. But they always give
yeah.
you the opportunity. If you would like to pay to connect with them, you can. So
oh,
with
goody.
That, you know, oh, that's how nice.
But for those of you who don't know us, we were being a little bit sarcastic.
That was very sarcastic, and that's one of the reasons I always tell people don't build your house on rented land. And that's if you try building
right.
an entire platform off of Facebook, if they change the rent on it, which is just what they did, you could be very, very destroyed by it. But one of the things I look at is looking and saying, what's the engagement? So when you do post something, track it. I mean, how many people are actually clicking from there and going to your website? And you can go into Google Analytics, which is a free tool, and you can see where people are coming from, the average stay time, you know, if they became a customer, all of those things that you can set up, because you can't eat a Facebook like. If they don't turn into a customer, it's really just a vanity metric. So looking at all of that and always be testing it and saying what posts or what things do best. I'd say one of the biggest things right now on Facebook is to upload your video directly to there. You know, in the past we used to go ahead and put the video
on YouTube.
Yeah, and we'd put the video on YouTube and then embed it on Facebook. And you'll get a whole lot more engagement and exposure on Facebook if you upload it directly to Facebook. The other thing to do with that, too, is that if you've ever gone through Facebook and you see that the videos start playing as soon as you scroll over them, although the volume doesn't come on with that. So what you want to do is show some action in your video, show some words so that even if somebody doesn't turn on the volume of it, you know, they could be looking at Facebook during a company meeting. They could be watching it at their desk. So make sure that even if they don't click on it and listen to it, they can get the gist of what you're saying. And that's very easy. If you take a video, you can go ahead and use various programs that, you know, are free or low cost to add, you know, text to the images and little call outs there. That's probably my best tip right now on Facebook. Yes.
Okay, I have a question. I don't want to get lost. On iPhones and tablets, iPads, there is an option to turn that off. And you can also do it in Facebook so that they don't automatically play, because it's a huge drain on your internet resources on your tablets and your phones. So I guess my question is, should you always ensure that you've got some kind of a bumper in the front of your videos, that, you know, something that has your logo on it, or, you know, just something that tells people what it's about in case they get to it in that video? So videos don't play for me automatically. I've made sure they don't. But I don't want to see somebody in mid-speech and with their mouth open either. You know what I mean?
True. True, like, that first image that comes up.
Right.
You can do that at the beginning, and that could be either a little banner there that tells them what it's about. It could be the picture of the person with some words that tell you what the video is about. That's very effective.
Right.
And then at the very end of it also, what we had talked about was adding a call to action. So after the end of every video, put something where they can, you know, get more information or at least know what site it came from so they can go back to there. I hesitate telling people to go ahead and put too much of an intro to the video. We did some testing with that, and there's great tools out there that will actually tell you where people drop off on a video. So, you know, if 100% start the video, for each second, how many drop off and what the percentage goes. And we did two different videos, and one with I think it was a 15-second intro, and then one that just got straight to the message. And the one that got straight to the message did so much better. Not only did we not lose the people during that first 15 seconds, but actually we lost fewer as time went on there.
Okay.
I think it was just because it was quicker that we could engage them. So now with that, whenever we do something on Facebook especially, we'll just get straight to the message.
Well, that makes sense. Now, what are you finding in your testing is the best length for these videos? I'll be honest with you, I'm not a video person. I would rather hear it or read it. I don't want to be forced to watch something that's longer than a minute or two. And if it's 60 minutes, you better be Jeff Walker. Seriously. That's
I can't even make it through Jeff's videos, honestly.
Or Ryan Dice, or Brendan Bouchard. And even then, I'd probably pause and come back.
I love Brendan. I always listen to his podcast, but I can't listen to all his videos.
And see, that's what I mean. I'm just not one of those people, and I know I'm not alone. So what is your finding that people, you know, their attention span is, what, 30 seconds, 60 seconds, 90 seconds, 30 minutes? What are you finding is optimal?
It really goes back to what your experts and what your customers say. I tend to not give that big data answer because everybody will say, well, the ideal time is 90 seconds. Well, it may be, but like you said, Jeff Walker can get away with 60 minutes. And if he did 90 seconds, it would kill his audience. So all these tests that. But I think the bigger point that I heard that you were making, and I agree with, is that not everyone learns in the same way. So make sure that you give the content to them in the way that they like. And that could be that all of your buyers, you know, are more visual, so use a lot of images. Maybe your buyers are such that they like written content, like you had mentioned. Well, then give them blogs and PDFs and stuff. Or just keep testing it and know that you don't have to just do it in one format. It's so easy to repurpose content right now. A great example that I always give is that you can go ahead and take a video, embed the video, upload that, then take the transcription and make that into a blog. Then take the main points of that and make a little presentation out of it, either on PowerPoint or any of those other ones out there, and upload that into SlideShare.
I was going to say SlideShare, absolutely.
Yeah, SlideShare just got bought by LinkedIn, and they're going to be doing some amazing things with that. I think that's a platform to watch. But it's amazing because you can see somebody do that, and they will rank 1, 2, and 3 all of a sudden for that keyword. And it's amazing because the video is usually number 1, the SlideShare is usually number 2, and the blog is usually number 3. So with that, you've got the same piece of content, really, but you're offering it to people that they can watch it in whatever and consume it in whatever they want.
Right. Now, I know that there's going to be questions about this because people are saying, this is fantastic information. It sounds logical. It sounds linear. How in the heck do I do it?
Well, and that's the thing, is that it's not a trick here. It's really just a strategy, and it's a strategy that our grandparents probably understood better than we did. My background comes from engineering, and my first job out of college was running nuclear power plants. And what that told me is that if you build a system, you know, you should be able to run it safely, effectively, with minimal tinkering to it. So really, it's just getting that system built up and then continually going ahead and feeding that system with content. Content is always the fuel that goes and fuels any inbound marketing system. So I would say the first step for anybody would be to go ahead and identify your ideal buyer persona and then start writing content to them. And if you go back to Inbound for E-Commerce, we've got the different steps on how to build that engine and what pieces of the engine all go together. But to me, don't worry about the transmission until you figure out a way to get the fuel.
Oh, that's brilliant. Okay, so where do people find, I mean, you mentioned Fiverr and eDesk, and of course I'm a virtual assistant. I run a virtual assistant company, so I know already a lot of the things you're talking about, but let's just operate under the assumption that our audience doesn't. So can you point them in any directions to help them with some of this content creation? I mean, they can get it written. I mean, you can hire writers if you need to. You can write it yourself. But the rest of the things, you're getting the graphics built, getting the slide shares built. Where do people go for help with things like that?
It's amazing how easy some of these things are to do with free tools.
Yep.
You know,
PowerPoint's fantastic.
Canva, PowerPoint, all those things. That being said, we're all busy business owners, and doing that takes us away from other things. So don't feel like you've got to do everything on your own. On that same page, we've got a list of 101 different tasks that you can outsource. And I always say outsource the stuff that you're not great at, that you don't love to do, or that the things that really don't add that much value. You know, you can come up with the ideas, but let somebody else execute it. And if you look around, help is all around you. It could be from virtual assistant companies. I built my entire marketing team really on freelancers. And some of them were people that I met through different agencies like Odesk or Fiverr. Fiverr's just, you can get any job done pretty much for $5. Other ones were ones that I went through conferences and just got to meet people And, you know, our best graphic designer, I met at a conference and we got talking and she understood my ideas and what I needed. The other thing is that if you've got any local colleges near you, if you're looking for content creators, there are all kinds of them there that are trying to get experience. So that could be a graphic designer that needs a little bit of experience or an internship. Give them some projects.
Good idea. I live in a college town.
Oh, journalism students are some of the best ones. They're all trying to find internships at newspapers, and the newspapers don't exist anymore.
No.
So we typically get about one journalism intern a semester, and
now,
they're so used
to
writing.
Tom? I mean, I honestly wouldn't even know where to go.
Sure. Go to the university online and just mm-hmm. find out, you know, who runs their journalism program or who runs their creative writing program, and just send them an email and reach out to them. Because they've got people that are looking for that. And so what we do is we'll bring in an intern, and if we've got thank you letters from people or testimonials, we'll say, hey, could you go ahead and contact this person, maybe interview them a little bit more, but, you know, maybe get an image, and then write that up into a story. Because they're so used to writing newspaper stories, and you think about it, that's all a blog is. So if you take 100 words of quotes from somebody, a journalism intern can write that into an engaging 600-word blog that is meaningful to people that read it. They can relate to it. And the other thing is that person that you just interviewed, you know that customer is now going to become an advocate, because that story they're going to take and they're going to share on their social media. And so from that standpoint, there's help all around. And with any of these tools, a lot of it is just limited by our creativity and our understanding of how they can be used.
And it's not difficult to find people. What I would suggest, though, and I know that you know this already, is that you really look. Again, you're looking for that social proof if you're on Fiverr or Odesk, or you're talking to me about my company. You look for the social proof. You look for the testimonials. You look, for example, for their work. You make an informed decision.
Yeah, it's not every one of them is out there, and you get what you pay for.
True.
That just because you outsource something doesn't mean that as a business owner or a creator that relieves you of all responsibility. You still have, you know, your customer better than anyone. So make sure that you look at it through your customer's eyes and say, will they like this? Does this relate to them? It's not just the number of content pieces you have out there, but the ones that your customers like. The other thing is that, think about it, it doesn't have to be perfect, right? Whatever ideas you have in your head aren't doing anybody any good until you share them. So if it's a good blog post, that will do your business more good. It will serve your customers a lot better than the perfect blog post that never gets written. So no matter what you do, I'm sure the first radio show you did was not as good as the 12th one you did.
I won't go back and listen to it. I don't even want to know.
So with that, just the way you learn is going out and doing it. So try different content. See what you like. See what your customers like. And I think that if you consistently do that, put that content out there, you're going to see that you'll attract more visitors, engage more leads, convert more customers, and ultimately make more advocates, which is how we build a business and build a brand.
Right. Engagement. I wanted to ask you, I know we've only got a couple of more minutes, but I wanted to ask you about Google+. What's your stance on that?
I always say that when Google does something, don't ignore it. That being said, they've been talking about the death of Google+ for a couple of years.
I love it as a platform. I mean, I happen
I
to really
it.
Enjoy Google+. I do.
The Hangouts, everything, the tools they have in there, I think is so much superior to Facebook. But the problem is, it's like the perfect party that nobody showed up for.
Right.
It doesn't matter if it's a perfect party. If none of your friends are there, you won't stick around either. And unfortunately, they've given it years and years, and we're not putting a lot of new effort into Google Plus, and we're not advising our customers to. I'll be sad when it goes, but I won't be shocked.
I won't be either, but I do make it a point to post there every day, because I pick up a lot of engagement somehow, some way from Google Plus. So I'm going to hang in there. I may be the last one, you know, I may be the one turning out the lights, but I'm going to hang in there with them. They've got my loyalty for now.
And with automated posting, there's no downside in doing that. And I think Google gives you positive signals back to your website. So if you're doing it for no other reason than to make Google happy, I think it's worth it. But as far as spending time there and engaging, we're not doing a lot of that anymore.
I'm not either. You know, I just find that when I look at my Google Analytics, a lot of my stuff is coming from Google Plus, but I don't engage. You know, I just post and I go see if there's anything of any interest to me, and then I'm back to work. But it's just one of those things, do you or don't you? And I wanted to kind of get your feel on it.
I wish it would work, but they haven't gotten traction in the last 3 years, and I can't imagine anything's going to change now for them to finally start getting traction.
That's too bad. And it's Google. You know, my attitude has always been Google is Google. I mean, they're going to give weight to their own products, but for some reason, this one just never really got quite off the shelf, did it?
It's the perfect party that no one showed up for.
Listen, tell people where they can find your great podcast.
Sure, you can find me at Inbound for E-commerce is my website, and you can go ahead and engage with me there. Like I said, all the resources we talked about are on a special page, just inboundforecommerce.com/partner for Partner in Success Radio. And the other thing is that go ahead and reach out to me on LinkedIn. I love that platform. I'm the only Tom Schwab in Kalamazoo, so I'd love to connect with you and learn from you just as you learn from me.
Oh, thank you. Well, listen, we're not done here. You've got to come back because I've still got questions for you. You would have thought
awesome,
in two
Denise,
interviews I could pick your brain, but I couldn't.
Well, I always enjoy this. This is I'm an hour ahead of you, so I spend a lot of lunch hours listening to you and your guests, and the only thing better than listening to it is talking with you live.
Oh, thank you. That is very kind of you. I've got a big old smile on my face. Well, listen,
I'm just still
everybody,
thinking about,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go right ahead.
I'm
thinking about the fresh seafood that you've got down there, and thinking that I'll have to do an interview live down there someday.
You have to. Listen, I make the best crawfish etouffee, bar none. It's better than anything you're going to find in a restaurant. You come on down, I'll cook.
It's a plan.
Okay. Well, listen, everybody, thank you for being with us today. The show will be available for download in about an hour, and you can find us in iTunes. Tom, as always, it is a tremendous pleasure speaking with you, and I really appreciate the list of resources that's going to go out on social media as soon as we get done here. So everybody, just type in our names, Denise Griffiths and Tom Schwab, and I will see you next week. Tom, thank you, thank you, thank you.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on your Partner in Success Radio.